வந்தேகம் ஸ்ரீகுரு.
The following is a conversation with His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, recorded on the 13th of June, 1974, in Paris, France.
Things that he suggests that perhaps this force is something more than person, since it is in all people. It is something all people.
That's all right. But all in all people, the force is a person. Just like the force is in him, force in me, but we are person.
He says this force. This force is the soul.
Yes, the soul is a person.
Oh, well, he's confused. How? What do you define by person then? Because our experience is this person.
Just like I am a living being, I have got living force. You have got living force, but we are talking as person.
His question is, well, how is it that the soul is also a person?
Because I am soul, you are soul, we keep our person. Yeah. That is person.
He suggests that we are only individuals, distinct, because of the bodily difference, that now we are persons, but afterwards we become one.
Not bodily, because you are individual, therefore you have got individual body. It's like my coat, it is cut according to me, not I am according to the coat. The dress is made according to the person, not the person becomes according to the dress.
He says that, well, he doesn't see the application. He says if we're
Why not discuss?
It's more important to resolve the problems of why man is suffering rather than discuss whether the soul is a person or not.
Because he has got different dress, different person.
Oh. So he's asking, well, therefore, what is the conclusion? If the soul is a person, how does that help us to solve the problem of the man's suffering?
That is another thing. Why man is suffering? First of all, just like we have to find out the disease, why he's suffering. And if the disease is cured, the suffering is cured.
He says there's an old Buddhist saying that no matter what kind of body you have, whether it be made of feathers or flesh or whatever kind of body you have,
no, it's not a question of body.
The problem is how to get out.
If you receive an error, if you receive an error, doesn't matter if the error is made with wood, with iron, with anything, just to take out the errors of your body, because that's the cause of suffering.
This young gentleman's question is, if you are pierced with an arrow, it's not so much important to discuss how the arrow has got there. Just like you suggest we define the disease before we try to cure it.
Now, we are not caring how the arrows, but you have got the arrows, you must take out the arrows.
That is his point. Also.
Yeah, so the disease is because he has forgotten his own self, therefore he's suffering.
Actually, that is the actual problem, to find out our
that he has. Suppose a man, a sane man, has become insane. That insanity will be cured, then he becomes a sane man.
Yes, he must understand that he is crazy.
Yes. He may understand or not understand. Somehow or other, he has become crazy. So if the craziness is cured, then he's not a man.
His point, he says, if a man understands that he's crazy, then he's not crazy anymore.
Prabhupada says, somehow or other, if he understands or not, if he gets cured of his insanity.
So the insanity is just like you are dressed, and if you identify yourself with the dress, that is insanity. So that is insanity. We are actually the living part soul. We are identifying at the present moment with the material body. Everyone is thinking, I'm Japanese, I'm Englishman, I'm German, I'm Indian, I'm white, I'm black. That is his insanity. So this insanity should be cured, that I am not this body, I am spirit soul. And when he understands that he is spirit soul, he should be engaged in the business of the spirit soul. And because he is misidentifying himself with this body, he is engaged with the bodily activities. So when he stops his bodily activities and he begins his spiritual activities, then he will be cured. So far, bodily, pains and pleasure, that will be automatically cured when he understands that he is not body. Just like I feel heat and cold on account of this body.
They believe that the soul and the body is one thing. They don't.
How is it one?
He says we have one body, we have the soul, and these two things cannot be separate.
How the man becomes dead?
He says the man is like a phenomenon. He appears and he disappears, and when he disappears, he emerges in this cosmic force.
Like anything, like a flower that grows and dies like and emerges again into the earth.
Merges?
Just like flower grows from the earth.
They do not believe in the reincarnation. Next part.
He says there is no personal reincarnation of the soul. He says himself he has no answer, but the Zen philosophy has one answer.
He was that cosmic force. Before birth, man was
the universality of everything.
And what you are now?
And now he is himself. Now he is different.
So how you become from
zero? He doesn't say different. He says, no, I'm myself. He says this point is, he doesn't think that man is more important than flower on the table. It's all the same.
Then why is answers for man's prayer? Suffering.
He says, the man is there, the suffering is there.
Then why is bothering our suffering? He was zero, beginning, and he will be zero. And now he's also zero.
He says there is two aspects. There is this aspect, everything is zero. But there is another aspect, there is a man who is always searching after to find a solution to his problem.
Why solution? He will automatically become zero and then finish everything.
Pourquoi chercher une solution?
Comment?
Il dit, pourquoi chercher une solution? He says religious life is a very deep thing on man, and he has to search out, and that must be his goal. But even if there is, even if there is no result, doesn't matter. He has to search.
Then how he can explain from zero something so important come into existence?
He says, actually, he doesn't start from zero. He starts from this cosmic force. He doesn't start from zero. He starts from the cosmic force. He says it's something we cannot define. What is it? And a man is not able to define.
That means you cannot define. That means your knowledge is imperfect.
He says his knowledge is imperfect. But he says his knowledge is imperfect, that's for sure. But he says to define this cosmic force with the human mind is to bring down this.
He says actually human mind cannot define it. He says a human mind can't actually encompass the whole of the cosmic force.
If you cannot define, there is no remedy for your suffering. Just like a disease, unless the physician knows what is the infection, he cannot treat.
He says one thing, we don't have to put name on disease, or we don't have to know this name is called like that, this name is called like that, to cure it.
Yes, that is the system. You go to a physician, he'll try to understand what is the cause of the disease. Then he makes treatment.
You agree about knowing the cause of the disease.
It's necessary to know.
Yes. What is the cause of the suffering?
It's the ignorance of himself. The man suffers because he's ignoring himself.
So let him become in knowledge.
I'm finding it hard to be able to translate because he says that we're ignorant and he says at the same time we're not ignorant. He says
ignorant. When you speak of ignorance, that means he has fallen down from knowledge. That is ignorance.
He says this knowledge is there. The man, this knowledge is there anyway for everyone, but the man take it or don't take it, ignore it or get some interest.
Why, as soon as you say ignorant, that means he has lost his knowledge.
He says there is ignorance, there is knowledge, but there is something beyond this knowledge and this.
What is the something? Do you know it?
He called these things God.
Huh?
That God. Is God.
That is God.
So therefore, we are suffering for getting God.
He says, well, all right, that's okay. You can say that we're suffering because we forgot God. The important thing is that we're suffering.
Yeah, that we also say. But we know the cause.
He says, but you are suffering still.
I'm suffering, but I'm under treatment. But you are not under treatment. You'll die.
He says Zen Buddhism is also a kind of treatment.
But if you do not know what is the goal of the treatment, then how the treatment will be successful?
He says we may choose a goal for ourselves spiritually, but after all, we're the ones who chose the goal, so it's all an individual question.
We are not choosing. God is asking to do this.
He said, therefore, we don't have to worry about what's the result. We just have to practice without being attached to the result.
No, without result, why should we practice unnecessarily?
He says the religious life is not a bargain between God and Him. He says we just have to practice without waiting for any result, without praying.
No, we are not so full. Without any result, we are going to do anything. We are not so full.
If whether you practice or you don't practice, you get the same result in the end. What's the use of doing anything?
The idea is that when you know that you will be cured, then I take the medicine. And if I don't know whether I will be cured or not, why shall I take the medicine?
He says from the medical point, that's all right, but from the religious point...
So you are talking about medical point, why you place something utopian?
He says this example of medical point we made is just an analogy, but the religious life...
The analogy must be perfect in all points, otherwise it is no analogy.
But Prabhupada, the premise of Zen is that the cosmic force falls into misery when it develops an individual desire. So an individual, as long as he has desires and he wants things, then he's forced to suffer, to take on a body and to suffer. So the Zen Satori is to give up all desire, not care one way or the other what happens.
No, that is also desire, to give up all desire.
Yes,
it is. That is also desire.
He says that the person who is practicing without goal, without desire, without getting the Satori, without anything, then he is practicing the Satori.
Now, where is the point? No desire?
No point.
From himself, he's just to practice Zazen, to meditate on Zen. Just to practice Zazen.
That is also desire.
Et ça aussi, c'est un désir. He says that for sure. In the beginning, when they are practicing Zazen, it's always some material desire. We desire that, we desire that. We like to know God and something like that. But by practicing Zazen, finally, we come to the point without, we don't have any more desire, just by practicing Zazen.
Then what is that position of no desire?
The real position is to eliminate the self.
Huh?
Is to eliminate the self. The only possible way that they can achieve no desire, no initiative, is to eliminate the self altogether. To make the self become eliminated and just be the cosmic one again, without any self.
Yeah, that will be done automatically while you practice so much.
He says the practice of Zazen...
Harmonized.
The practice of Zazen harmonizes the self and this cosmic force.
Now, let me explain. Suppose the material elements are there. Somehow have they combined together, they become this body. Is it not? Now, this body, I am dead body, automatically it again becomes dispersed to the different elements. So, this is taking place for even cats and dogs. Then what is the value of my meditation?
Actually, Srila Prabhupada, you've defeated him.
Yeah, he says.
He doesn't really have an answer.
Yeah. He says, so then I'm practicing like a cat and dog, but the deep goal.
But I mean to say, what result will get more than the cats and dogs?
Zen philosophy is they accept reincarnation, and the self keeps on taking bodies until he becomes selfless. And it's only in the human form that he can develop that selflessness.
Then they have to accept good work and bad work?
Yes, they do. They have a similar understanding of karma, so far as the material self is concerned. And that the soul or the self takes on different forms until it becomes perfectly selfless, and then it merges back into the nondescript, into the the cosmic force. So that, apparently, I don't know if this young man's versed in Zen.
That is our definition, anna vilasita sunnam. Sunna means you have to give up all material desires. Jnana karma anambitam. But the desire should be synchronized. Anukullena Krishna anusa. You have to desire to satisfy Krishna.
Well, they come to the point of trying to give up all material desires, but at that point they say there's nothing, there's no self.
That is their ignorance, or they do not understand, or they do not try to explain because the followers will not understand.
Yes.
That is our also point, annavilasita sunna, to become desireless. But after becoming desireless, what is it? Just like you become painless from the disease. That means painless means everything finished, then what? Let me enjoy this pain. After being painless means everything is finished. No. Painless means no material pain, but spiritual life. That is painless.
Okay. Spiritual.
No, their point is they come, Zen Buddhism or Buddhism goes as far.
Now it is clear, as you said, that unless he becomes desireless, that desire means material desire.
Yes. That's actually what they're speaking about when they say desire.
So they are not so advanced that there is spiritual desire.
Yes.
That they do not understand. But so far the material desirelessness, that is accepted by ourselves.
Yes.
It is something like this, just like a child without education at home is simply doing mischief. So the parents want to make him mischievousness less. But if the parent does not know that he should be given better engagement, otherwise he cannot be mischievouslessness, that he does not know.
He says there is something beyond material desire and spiritual desire.
He doesn't understand the definition when we say spiritual. He's confusing spiritual with something like esoteric.
Yeah.
Spiritual is the opposite of material. Beyond material desire, that means beyond...
Subtle as well.
Yeah, beyond gross and subtle desire. When we say spiritual, we mean transcendental.
Mm.
The opposite.
Purified
desire.
He says it's still a desire. It may be a pure desire, but
because
whether it has changed.
Because he has no information for his spiritual desire, he thinks material desire is as good as spiritual desire.
Yeah. They don't have a conception of spiritual. Then everything is material.
No, it is ignorance. Just like a man is suffering from disease, he is also lying down, he is also eating, he is also passing through. And if he is informed that after your disease is cured, you will also nicely sleep, you will also nicely walk, you will also nicely eat. But he is thinking, again eating, again sleeping, again, this is something like this.
Yes.
So I don't want to be cured.
Yes, that is the trouble.
He does not know what is the sleeping in healthy condition, and what is eating in healthy condition. He thinks this eating and that eating the same.
He says for him, spiritual and material, they are going together. Spiritual and material are going together. In spiritual there is something material, and in material there is something spiritual. And they are together, they form an harmony, and this harmony is the goal.
But he has not knowledge that although, just like here is my leg and here is my nail. Now when I cut the nail, I don't feel. And as soon as you come a little later, the skin, you feel pain. They are one. But why there is no sensation? Why there is sensation?
He doesn't understand the analogy. He doesn't understand the example, how that explains spiritual life as compared to material
then
life.
Then why the, how he'll understand? Let me know, I'll tell him. Let me know how he'll understand.
He doesn't understand the example of the skin and the nail. How does that
why
explain?
Why it is everyone understands, why he does not understand? Here is the nail, here is the skin. As I prick the nail cutter, here, there's, ooh. And why it is cutting on, and it is going on nicely. Why does not understand?
You see, he doesn't understand the analogy with...
Analogy is, means why there is no spiritual sensation, that is matter.
It's just merely meant to be an illustration. Not that you're supposed to compare everything all the way around. The body is also material, the nail is also material. The point is, that which is not sensed spiritually, by the true identity of the soul, that which is experienced outwardly by the material body and the senses, that is matter. But the basic element or the basic consciousness is spiritual, and that's eternal. Whereas the sensation from outward, like what I see today and taste today, that is temporary. But the taster, the seer, he is eternal, the self.
Now, as soon as that spirit soul will be off from this body, this part of the body also will be without any sensation. Therefore, the distinction of sensation and no sensation is due to the presence of the spirit soul.
He says the important thing is the basic principles. If you accept the basic principle, for example, that the soul has a form, well, then we can discuss many, many things afterwards.
Yes, soul has a form.
He's asking, is the form of the soul material?
No, spiritual.
He says it's an idea that he finds difficult to understand, spiritual form.
Yeah, that requires knowledge. That requires how to get that knowledge. He has no such knowledge.
Explain the basic difference between the Buddhist concept and our concept is that after the material is the ignorance of the material body, the material self is cleared away and eliminated, there's still a self, there's still a body, but it's spiritual. It's opposite from material. Whereas the material body is simply temporary and liable to suffer, the spiritual body is eternal and never suffers. It's just the opposite of the material. Buddhists get to the point of eliminating the material, but then they don't have the next step of the spiritual.
No understanding of the spiritual.
Yes.
So the concept of Zen is to see spirituality in matter and something material in spirit, in spirituality. Mm-hmm. That's the concept of Zen. Mm-hmm. To realize spiritual life according to matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, what that means, that's just an expression of the idea that everything is ultimately one. You don't have to make value judgments. You shouldn't make value judgments or say one thing is better than the other. Mm-hmm. But everything is ultimately the same. And the self is also the same as everything. Mm-hmm. So there's no distinction and there's no, objective or conscious awareness of anything, because everything is everything.
There's no discrimination.
Yes. There's no self.
He says in the daily life, there is dualities.
Mm. Daily
life.
There is
something wrong, we do something right. But when we are speaking about spiritual, elevated life, everything is one.
Yes, when the spiritual spirit is gone, then your daily life is also gone.
He said, yeah, for sure, we all die.
Yes, therefore, daily life means so long the spirit is there. As soon as the spirit is gone, there is no more daily life.
He says, but God...
Has the dead man has any daily life?
He says his daily life is just lying in his coffin.
Hmm?
Lying in his coffin.
That is daily life? That is perpetual life.
I ask him, is death always the solution? When I die, even if I don't attain Zen within this life, when I die, does that solve all the problems?
He says death is a part of life. The question is not to die or not to die. He says it's not to know we are going to get salvation by going to die or not. Just the important is just life. And the death is a part of life. Here and now, what's happening here in the instant, here now, well, that's important for me.
What is that?
What's important for him is here and now, what he's doing in the instant. He says death is just part of life.
What difference does it make if someone becomes religious or someone becomes a demon?
He says, in a demoniac person there is some religiosity, and in a religious person there is some demoniac qualities too.
Are you a demon?
As we want.
So far we know Lord Buddha is considered as incarnation of God. He was sympathetic with the animal killing. So he wanted to stop this animal killing.
He says he thinks that Buddha was just a man who was searching how to solve the problems of death and life. And when he gets some experience, he preached this message.
Zen school don't accept the preeminence of the personality of Buddha. They say Buddha is just a state of mind. And various men in history have attained that state of mind. And no one particular man was just was the Buddha, and no one, set apart from everyone else.
At least he set the example before others. That is not wonderful, but he set the example. That is original Buddha.
He doesn't deny the personality of Buddha, and he says the most important thing we are following is some kind of dynastic succession from Buddha until now. He says the most important thing is the relation with the disciple and the master within the filiation from Buddha.
They don't have the same historical. I don't think they're considered the same historical personality. I studied Zen myself for a number of years, and they don't distinguish one particular individual in one particular period of time as being the Buddha. All the way back in history, as long as history goes, any man who's come to the state of enlightenment has become a Buddha. And it didn't begin anywhere.
He says it doesn't give any special meaning to Buddha. Sometimes Buddha is wisdom, sometimes Buddha is a concept of God, like the Christianity they call God, or Buddha is all this disciplic succession. It doesn't give any special meaning to the Buddha.
No, no, Buddha, actually, Buddha means knowledge. One knows, that is the meaning. So, that is existing always. Now, we are talking Zen.
Zen's a later development. The school of Zen started.
So we are trying to study this Zen of Buddha. Zen Buddha. Buddha means ordinarily knowledge.
Zen school is a civilization of the old Buddhist doctrines. Previously, hundreds of years ago, to completely follow the Buddhist path, one had to renounce all activity, had to go away from civilization and live in hermitage. Zen.
Nirvana.
Yeah, Zen allows a man, according to the precepts of Zen, you can act within the world. You can be a businessman, you can be a soldier, you can be anything, and still attain the same state of perfection by acting without desire, by acting unattached to the results.
That is our pleasure. Arjuna acted as a soldier, and still he was recognized as devotee.
What he says is the form of the practice doesn't really matter, but the inspiration or the motivation to practice, to try and become desireless, that is the dynamic thing. No. It doesn't matter what form it takes.
The problem is still death, though.
Huh?
The problem is still death.
Practice without any aim.
Well, they say that the aim is the practice itself.
Huh?
They say the aim is the practice itself. Just like we say
aim is there, he says, that to become desireless. That is the aim.
Yes.
So why does he say that there is no aim?
When he's talking about practice, he's talking about special practice, the Zazen practice, and his concept in Zazen, his concept of Buddha, is this disciplic succession, and to practice under the guidance of the spiritual master from this disciplic succession of Zazen, from Buddha. That is his practice.
If he says that there is no aim, you go and practice. So aim is there, he says, that to become desireless.
He says Zazen is in himself the satori, is the practice. We don't practice to get the satori, but the satori is going automatically with the practice.
Now the aim of practice is to become desireless. Is it not?
He says the goal of the practice
is to
become without goal.
Oh, it is nonsense.
That's also a goal.
But it is nonsense. Goal is without goal. And what is this? These are vague terms.
It's like saying nothing is true. But that's a truism.
It is darkness.
They want to become mindless.
But he's plus always. And if you have no goal, there is example, man without any aim is sheep without any rudder. What is it called? Aeroplane is going with an aim to land in some country. But if he goes on simply without any aim, then there will be disaster.
They have an aim, but the aim is because they haven't.
That you say that word. He does not say. You say.
No, I mean, philosophically considering, they have an aim, but it's very obscure. The substance and the significance of that aim is
so, without aim, what is the use of practice?
He says he likes the practice without goal, and he doesn't give any value to the practice.
Oh, that is foolishness. Goal. Without goal, practicing something, it is foolishness.
He's also working for a goal. He
does not know what is that goal.
Semantically with what
He does not know what is that goal.
But he says the goal is to become
We give the goal. Jagyarthe. Jagyarthe karma. We give the goal for satisfying the Lord Vishnu, Jagga, Jaggapuru. You know the goal.
He said, who is Vishnu?
Vishnu is God.
And how we can satisfy God?
That you have to learn from me.
He says, cela vous devez l'apprendre de votre maître.
Bien sûr.
He says, yes.
Me means from the spiritual master. If you don't work for Vishnu, Jagga, Jagyartha Karma, Annatra, Loko, I am Karma Bandhana, then you will be entangled in this birth and death. Just like if I do not know what is healthy life, then if I live whimsically, then I'll infect so many contaminous disease and I'll have to suffer one after another, one after another, one after another. Therefore, the aim is Vishnu. Nate vidu sartha gatin Vishnu. These people, they do not know that what is the aim of life. The aim is Vishnu. Durasayaje bahirattvam. They are implicated with the external energy. They are very much anxious to mitigate this suffering, mitigate that suffering, mitigate that suffering, that suffering, that suffering. The suffering will never end. Simply they will be bewildered, one after another, one after another. Sometimes man's life, sometimes dog's life, sometimes cat's life, that's life. So, this kind of philosophy is propounded by blind men. One blind man is guiding another blind man without knowing the strict, stringent laws of nature. So, this kind of leadership will not make any solution if you do not know what is the real goal.
He doesn't agree. If a man create or imagine a goal, he says the real goal, the real things.
But it is not imagine. That is another foolishness to imagine a goal. If we imagine some goal, that is another escalation. You have to understand what is the goal of life from superior. That's like a child. He does not know what is the goal of life, but his parents know. He must be educated. So goal has not to be imagined. Goal has to be understood from superior. So if the superior man is also blind, then he cannot lead other blind followers. If a blind man takes the position of superior, then he will lead his followers to the ditch only, that's all.
He says, who can understand that someone is blind or not blind?
Who can judge?
Who can judge?
That, but because he has no eyes, he cannot see. Therefore, he has to hear. He has to hear.
Il dit, mais comme justement il n'a pas les yeux pour voir, il ne peut pas voir, donc il doit écouter.
How can we tell a real authority?
As opposed to someone who is posing as an authority.
This authority means just like you follow somebody, you are going to somewhere by aeroplane. You do not know. But others are purchasing ticket and going there, so you have to follow them. So the authority is, if he does not know, therefore we are giving the chance, the association of the devotee. The devotee, they are practicing something for going back to home, back to Godhead. So you have to mix with the devotees and then gradually understand.
What he's saying is, what is the standard of measurement? There are so many people saying they are the authority. How does one individually judge which one is the best or proper?
So that way he has to judge himself. It is like this, just like if you eat, then you judge yourself whether you are satisfied or not. The process is described. First of all, the thing is that he is inquisitive to know the ultimate goal. That is first qualification. That he is actually searching after the goal of life. That's why. That is first qualification. If he has no such aim, that I must find out the actual aim of life, then he'll remain always in darkness. Then next process will be that he has to associate with persons, those who are also actually the goal of life. And then next process is, as Bhagavan was telling last time, that we have no problem. Then next process will be how we have become free from all problems. Then he will say, you do like this. Acting according to him, one who says I have no problem, so let me act like him. Right. When he feels, yes, I have no problem, then it is fixed up. Yeah.
But this point, he says, in the Buddhist philosophy, there is these three things, these three steps.
No, apart from this philosophy, we are talking general. General talk. So when you understand, yes, I have also no problem, then he is fixed up. Then spiritual life begins. When he becomes problemless, no more problem, then spiritual life. So long he is busy to solve the problems of the material, there is no spiritual life. You find out this verse, Janghi navathayanti te purusang purusar sava. Samodukha samodukha. Yang hi na bhathayante ete purusam purusar sava.
Yang hi na bhathayante
ete. Ta amita taya kalpate. Samodhu.
Yang hi na bhathayante ete purusam purusar sava. Samadukas sukam dhyaram. Translation. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation.
Yes. So long this material disturbances disturb him, he cannot get any spiritual life.
He's all right with this point. You agree with this point? Yes,
sir. He'll agree with all the points, provided he's fixed up. Huh? Not after that, in this life, you can be fixed up. Provided you associate with the person who are fixed up.
He says you have to be constantly fixed up, not only one moment and after it's flowing. We always have to be fixed up each time, all the time.
Not this time, just like our devotees, they come to the Sankirtan, once, twice, thrice, he becomes interested. Then he becomes fixed up.
He says, to want to become fixed up, that is important.
Yes.
And just on the moment.
Yeah, unless one is fixed up, his spiritual life does not begin. Right. Spiritual life means fixed up. It's not agitated. Some of dukkha. What is that?
The same verse. Sama dukkha sukham jiram. Sama dukkha sukham jiram. Unaltered in distress or happiness.
Is that in part?
Anyone who is steady in his determination for the advanced stage of spiritual realization and can equally tolerate the onslaughts of distress and happiness is certainly a person eligible for liberation.
He says so, that we just have to practice now.
Goal must be fixed up, practice must be there, and one must be fixed up, then it will be.
He says it's very simple.
Yeah, it's very simple.
Why is it very simple?
First thing to know that I am not this body. Because within this body, there is a living force. I am that living force. Then, he'll understand that there is living force in this big cosmic, gigantic manifestation. There is a living force. So what is the relationship with that living force and this living force? Then when it understood that living force is great and I am small, then what is my duty? Here we see that the great takes service from the small. Therefore, my business is to serve the great. That is final. In three lines, you can understand the whole truth. Provided you understand that if you become rigid to your understanding, own understanding, then it is very difficult.
It's very
difficult. Otherwise, it is very simple. Living, you are a living force. That's there is no doubt. Is there any doubt?
No, he has no doubt.
Then there must be one living force for the whole cosmic manifestation. So he is also individual. I am also individual. But he is great, I am small. With small business, he should serve the great. If the small falsely thinks himself that he is as great, that is ignorance. So one has to get out of this ignorance that he is thinking falsely that he is as great as the big. Then he is in fixed up. Then further progress.
Then we can ask, what is that great? Then we can ask, what is that great?
Yes, that you can understand very easily. Just like you want money. You are in need of money, but you have no sufficient money. The greatness means he has more than sufficient money. That is great. Suppose you are weak, and if he is like you, no, he is unlimitedly stronger than you. He has got knowledge, but not perfect knowledge. But he has got unlimited knowledge. In this way, you can understand greatness.
You understand the point.
Greatness should be understood comparing my position. We can understand this man is greater than me. He is superior than me. That we can understand. Similarly, we can understand, just like we, human beings, we are floating, flying one biggest airplane, 747, and you are thinking you are very wonderful. But that great is floating millions of planets in the air. But the foolish man cannot see the process. He can see that a pilot is floating this airplane. So there must be one big pilot who is floating all this. But he cannot see. Therefore he says nature. So he cannot see. Just a child, he cannot see that within the plane there is a pilot, a pilot. And he's thinking that the plane is moving automatically. So one who is foolish, he sees the cosmic, wonderful work only. He does not know there is a pillar. And in the absence of that knowledge, he is thinking that I am also being moved in that way. So long I do not see the pillar of the cosmic movement, I am fool. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita says, Namana duskitanam mura. Namana duskitanam mura prapadanti naradama. Maya vidyana. His knowledge is lost.
Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest amongst men, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto it.
So, he, naradhama means lowest of the mankind. In the human form of life, one understands that as there is a pilot in the aeroplane, there is a pilot on this big cosmic man.
But his last reaction to that was that he always finds Indian analogies amusing.
Because I think...
But he has no other knowledge. Without analogy, he cannot understand. Then it will be dogmatic. So, if you go this way, you are dogmatic, and if you this way, the analogy. Then what way he will take? But you are a fool. You know, one way can say that is a foolish way. You do not know.
The example is that this body, there is a living force within the body which is causing it to move, to work, and that living force is the soul. And when the soul leaves this body, then the body is no longer moving and eating and talking and hearing and seeing. So in the same way, in this universe, there is a greater spiritual person, and his body, in a sense, is this whole universe. And it is moving on the same principle, because he is the supreme consciousness.
But what do you know about the soul leaving the body? Maybe when the body leaves the soul also dies.
Well, the point is that body and soul are two things.
I think it is same thing.
You think, but how you can prove?
How you can prove that the body...
You cannot prove.
You cannot prove.
When the soul is gone...
He's asking, how can we prove our point?
Yes, I can prove that the body is dead because the soul is gone.
He wants to know how we can prove
that body. He says, I can also say that when the body is dead, the soul is dead.
No, but at the time of death, the body is still there. The body is still there, just like your body's there. At the time of death, your body will still be there, but it won't be the same. Something's missing. Something's gone away. Hmm. What's the difference between a dead body and
how you can explain why the body's hand is there, leg is there, head is there, why you stop working?
Yes. He says when there's no longer any movement in the cells. Scientific explanation.
Why don't you, if you know, they replace their cells.
The scientists don't have a perfect explanation either. They don't know exactly what death is. What is the difference?
They cannot know also what life is.
They do. They know this much, that life is what is not present in a dead body. So it must be different than the body.
But the death is, or you can change also what you say.
How you can change? Can you make the dead body alive? Yeah.
No, you can't turn. I can say that life is not present in a dead body, but you can't say that death is present in a live body.
Now he says that the living force and the body is the same.
Yes,
does it not say? But why the body becomes dead and the living force gone? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why the body is no more moving?
He says. It's just what he says. He says when the body is dead, the everything is gone. But what is still existing is the karma.
The karma.
Yeah. But it's still existing when the body is dead and when the soul is gone. It will still, the something is still there and still existing is a karma.
It's not really true.
Let's say if your it's hand is cut off. Mm-hmm. Your hand is cut off and it's lying there. Why is it that you are not conscious of that hand?
Because the nerves are just cut.
If the body and the hand is the same, when it is cut, then it is lying down on the floor. So why there is no consciousness? This question is very intelligent.
Because the hand is cut.
But it is hand. Why there is no consciousness?
Part of the body, it should have its own consciousness. The body and consciousness.
You say the consciousness and body is the same. So when it is cut, why there is no consciousness? Therefore, the body is different from consciousness. Therefore, body is different from consciousness.
And also, if he says that the soul and the body are the same, then what is the cause of death then? Then what is death?
Well, we say the soul goes away from this body, just like if I'm sitting here, I can go away from this room. So, similarly, the soul is within the body. It goes away. And therefore the body is dead.
That's our explanation. But what is his explanation of death? If the soul and the body are the same, then what is the cause of death?
That he does not know. He cannot explain.